On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Meg McKean. Welcome, Meg.
Peter, great to be with you. Thanks for the invite.
Yes, I'm very excited to chat with you. And I know a lot of our listeners know your name and may have heard you before. Meg's got about 20 years worth of experience in underwriting and sales. So she emerged from the insurance industry, but she took a sabbatical back in 2017 and launched the following year Adjunct Advisors, which is adjunctadvisors.com if you want to safely surf there while you're listening. Mm-hmm. The simple belief, Meg, that the people who have made career in insurance deserve a better experience. So I think your company is so interesting, your approach. I love chatting with you prior to our recording this, and so I'm looking forward to it. You have a podcast of your own, Meg, called Bound and Determined, which we can also talk about here. Anyway, welcome again to the show. And I want to ask you why you feel you can make a difference for people who the many, many thousands of insurance people out there who have made it a career and it's a great industry. We know that. But what was the passion that led you to go from being in underwriting and sales, you know, working for insurance organizations to where now you took a step back and said, geez, I want to do something different.
Yeah, there's so many layers here, Peter, and I'm going to peel them back a little bit because
mm-hmm. Sure.
It was actually quite the opposite of passion for insurance that led me here. It was a wipeout, a burnout, a complete, maybe a slightly premature midlife crisis, if you will, questioning, what am I doing here? And is this the work that I'm doing? Is this what I'm here to do? Is this my mission, my purpose, the best expression of who I am in the world? And it wasn't, frankly. And, you know, the industry, as you said, a wonderful, wonderful place with lots of opportunity and wonderful people that are all working hard to make it happen, but very, very out of alignment for who I am as a person, as a human, in the way that I show up in my other relationships. And it's also a bit of a double-edged sword. Compensated well, opportunities presented, you know, so much of my career story is very similar, maybe to what others have experienced along the way. But at the same time, I was building this career, I was also living my personal experience, my personal life, and taking some risks and doing a lot of deep exploration about who I am as a woman, as a human, as an employee, and really reevaluating where work fit into my life. One of the things I want to challenge or to think maybe a little bit differently about today is that so many of us are here in insurance by accident. We're starting to see generations coming into the business with degrees in risk management and insurance, and I love that for them. But a lot of us got here because we didn't know where else to go or because the opportunity presented and it was a good one. And so it was an accident that we got here, but it's been a choice every day that we stay. And it's that choice that we make every day that we stay that I've really spent the last almost 6 years to really make sure that we are making the choice that's in alignment with, again, who we are as humans and our relationship with work, and also the people that we work for and that we work with in terms of our clients, our stakeholders, colleagues, bosses, all of those humans that we come in contact with. So much has changed in the last several years about our relationship with work, and we don't necessarily have avenues in the insurance industry, or at least we haven't, to really talk about that connection that we have with work. And so a lot of what I'm doing right now is helping to make sure that people are feeling that fullest expression of who they are and that we've got the channels in place and the methods and the mediums for that to happen in the workplace. So there's so much to it. I do want to add a little clarification. The sabbatical that you referenced in my bio was not a sabbatical in the traditional sense. I did leave my last corporate role in 2017 in a very uncharacteristic way. I quit my job without a job, and I had really seen it coming to some degree, had started saving really aggressively to see if I could pull off some time off, frankly, and not work and see what that felt like and what opportunities opened up for me in that way, and seriously considered leaving the insurance industry altogether. I was really, really frustrated and feeling unseen and unsupported and very misaligned, and explored some other avenues and then decided to come back around and maybe work on making some changes to the extent that I could to the things that were out of alignment for me. What if I could be part of bringing a different experience to the industry for folks who might be feeling similarly? And the more I shared my story, the more people started knocking on my door and peeking around the corner saying, hey, I feel that way too. And that's been a great, just a fundamental validation of the work that I'm doing. But frankly, it's led to a really thriving, growing business, which is what I set out to achieve here. Mm-hmm. So it's a neat moment in time that you're capturing me in.
Well, yeah. And Meg, you were ahead of your time, really, because when you were questioning the whole work environment and what you said was out of alignment. And it just, that whole sentiment, which partly I think is generational, but also just driven by the pandemic and people really questioning the whole idea of work. You know, why do I go to work? Where do I work? When do I work? What are my priorities for my personal life and some charity work I want to do vis-a-vis my paid job? And where that is all headed, I find it just fascinating. It's just a fascinating topic because we have been so long defined by, when I say we, I'm a boomer, so that's my generation. The seniors were this way, maybe to some extent the Gen X after the boomers, but it started to change. People are really questioning like the whole purpose of work and not being defined by career, maybe being defined instead by something else. And I think it's a really good thing because there's a lot of time you spend at work, thinking about work, going to work, driving home from work, worrying about work stuff on weekends and that sort of thing. And yeah, it helps that you love what you do if you're fortunate to love if it doesn't feel like work if you love what you do. But still, it's something, it's a responsibility and it's a thing. It's a huge part of your life. And so I think it's really great that you have kind of been a little bit ahead of your time and questioning. And it started with yourself. You said you were out of alignment. When you say out of alignment, can you articulate more what that meant for you?
Yeah, I can. And I appreciate the reference to the generational change that's happening in the industry. We've got 5 generations working in the business right now. I say with so much love and affection, I'm an old millennial, a young Gen Xer. I fit in this little chunk of 5 years between the two generations where we didn't grow up with technology. I got my first email address in college. You know, Lotus Notes was our email provider when I first started at the first carrier I worked for out of college. So I've appreciated a non-tech life and also appreciate a tech life. And so in our industry right now, being able to be that bridge between all the different generations and see sort of both sides of the discussion, remember the good old days, appreciate the good old days, but also embrace and welcome what's to come has really been this sweet spot for me that I believe is exactly why I'm able to do the work that I'm doing right now. And that's a really powerful moment in time to be able to initiate these conversations in this way. Peter, I totally forgot your question. I wanted to make sure that I got that tidbit in there about generational change. Remind me where we're going.
Well, you said several times that you felt out of alignment.
Yeah. Yeah. And
yeah.
Yeah. And really what that looked like for me was, you know, my last role, and this isn't about the role specifically, you know, I have a degree in sociology. I had grand plans after I graduated from college to go get a master's degree and move into the counseling field in some form or fashion. And we get advice and wisdom from all sorts of sources at different times in our life. And at the time, the message that I was hearing was maybe go get a job and make some money. And with a degree like sociology in a really good job market, which it was then, there were a lot of opportunities to go a lot of different ways. And so I ended up in the insurance industry and I did exactly what I set out to do. I was able to get promoted and consistent raises and opportunities, and the phone would ring and I would answer the call and really had amassed this career story that was pretty great. I've worked with some great organizations over the years and accomplished a lot and accumulated lots of really interesting skills, but in my mind, skills that didn't translate anywhere other than the insurance industry. And I've never been an insurance junkie. I don't read policy forms for fun on the weekends. I've always enjoyed the human side of our business rather than the technical insurance product. Can I do it? Absolutely. But in that last role, I found myself in the weeds. I was so in the weeds. I was dealing with accounting discrepancies and commission reconciliation and people who weren't paying their bills and bully board members, you know, that were policyholders trying to school me on insurance after 20 years of doing this for a living. And I just felt this sense of like, I am this strong representation of a woman. I got married when I was young, divorced when I was 30, reestablished myself personally in downtown Chicago, and was feeling very, I won't say empowered, but powerful in that moment. And then also looking at my career saying, this doesn't match up. This isn't who I am. I'm not someone who is in the back seat or playing small. And I felt like I was playing small in that moment. And that didn't mean that I wanted to be an influencer, that I wanted to be on billboards, that I wanted to have a talk show. It just meant that I didn't feel like the best parts of me were the ones that I was able to express in my work every day. The other thing I noticed, and this was true in my personal life and professionally, if I blinked, 10 more years would go by and I would be in exactly the same place, because we start to get comfortable. Sometimes we get complacent. Sometimes we get scared. All of these things are happening simultaneously. And I knew that if I was going to take a leap, it was now or never. And I'm the type of person, go big or go home. I needed my back against the wall in order to figure out what was next. I was never going to build this business while I was still full-time employed, because I had enough work to keep me busy full-time and I was paid really well. So where was the pain? Where was that friction point where I was actually going to start to take the steps that would obviously ultimately lead me here? But it was messy and it was a really difficult. I ended up taking a year off between my last full-time role and then the launch of the company that I now run. And it wasn't, you know, I talk candidly, I did a lot of yoga and made some great dinners and was in a relationship at the time and was able to be very present for my partner then. And that was all great. But I was really afraid that I wasn't going to be able to figure it out and that perhaps my best years were behind me and that I had walked away from something pretty great and that maybe the industry wouldn't warm up to the ideas that I had. And frankly, they didn't right away. It was a grind. The first several years, candidly, because of the pandemic, you know, I'll never understand fully the impact that the pandemic has had on my business or the growth of my business. But there were plenty of dark afternoons sitting in my condo in Chicago where I was questioning, this is either going to be a grand success or a colossal failure. And I have no idea right now which way it's going to go. And those are really tough moments. But I'm obviously really proud of what I've achieved, but I also understand when others reach out to me and they're thinking about going out on their own, the stakes can feel really high and entrepreneurship isn't for everyone. I have quit my business more than once, and I say that with affection, but it's been, you know, a challenging week, and Thursday night I shut my computer and I take Friday off to recalibrate, and then I come back around the next week and I try again. And that's I think a lot of us in full-time, more traditional corporate roles have those days, and entrepreneurship can be that way as well. So a lot of emotions, a lot of highs and lows, but that alignment really came from realizing that I was not living my fullest expression in my career, and I had a choice to do something about it. And that was that kind of critical moment for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you said, I was feeling empowered, but not feeling powerful? It's a lot of people in this industry. I mean, it's a pretty wealthy industry. You know, it does well during tough times. Obviously, the latest example is the pandemic itself. It's stable. It's been around for years and years and years. There's a lot of opportunity in the business. People are paid well. They have titles. You know, that was your scenario. But why did you not feel powerful? You had, you know, as I think a lot of people might be in your shoes or your old shoes, I should say.
Yeah, and they are. I know they are. There's people right now listening who are either like, oh, this woman's in my head right now, or I don't understand it because I'm having a totally different experience. And I think both of those things can be true. I'm able to do what I'm doing right now because I did what I did for so long in the corporate space. You know, everybody's risk tolerance is different, obviously, especially in our industry, but everybody's financial situation is different as well. And I put my head down and saved aggressively in the first, you know, chapter of my career. And so I knew if I took a step to the side, this isn't a step back, this is a step to the side, a bit of a gamble on myself, that there wasn't going to be a long-term financial ramification if it didn't work. And so that was a huge comfort to me that came from the industry, because I had worked for 18 years in the business before I went out on my own. I wasn't undoing any of that sort of good work and effort that I had done. I also knew we love to take people back in the industry. You know, I've worked for companies where I've never actually left a company and come back, but where they actually presented an award at the annual company meeting for the employees that had left and come back. Because all of us, I won't say all of us, many of us are in a period of transition constantly. You know, personal lives are changing and evolving. And a lot of the people that I'm in conversation with now are in that very curious, you know, hey, Meg, I've been doing this for 20 years, thinking specifically about, well, producers and maybe mid-level underwriting leaders. Those are a lot of the people that I'm chatting with these days. I've achieved what I wanted to achieve. I've got financial stability. I've got a nice retirement nest egg. I've got freedom and I've got flexibility. Maybe they've got kids. I don't, but perhaps they have children and the kids are off to college or thinking about whatever might come for them. And maybe some elderly or aging parents, but they're still doing okay. And so there's this kind of this open space right now. And they're questioning, what am I doing here? I thought I wanted a career in insurance for the financial stability, but I got that. And I thought I wanted it because I could do good, meaningful work for the people that I serve. And I'm doing that, but this hard market is like one we've never seen. And I'm really tired of picking up the phone because everybody's mad at me. And so I'm not finding that the joy or the pleasure that I once felt. Plus now in this hybrid or remote work environment, there isn't that sense of camaraderie that maybe we felt with our colleagues in the past. And so all of the things that maybe once lined up for us professionally don't anymore. But the biggest lever that's changed is who we are as people. We are not the 22-year-old stars in our eyes producer with the yellow pages, hoping that we can pull off this career in insurance sales. We've done that. We're not that underwriter who's like, you want me to manually rate ISO loss costs to get property pricing? We're not doing that anymore. Like, the business has evolved, but we have evolved as well. And I think people are asking for more and wanting more and demanding more out of the time that they spend at work and in the process of work. And as an industry, we haven't, because we don't, generally speaking, we don't need to think proactively about a lot of these things. But our employees right now are demanding more of us as employers. And we went through the phase of ping pong tables in the break room. And now everybody's got pet insurance and, you know, we're going to give you summer Fridays. And those things are all great. And I'm not devaluing those things, but more and more people are having what I would call a bit more of an existential, this work is not an expression of who I am. And I don't know how much longer I can do it. And I don't know that I need to. And that's the really curious point, is I've got folks in my ear right now who are saying, I'm thinking about my exit and I'm 47. Like, they're not going to stay until they're 85 with their books of business and, you know, wheel their, I won't be crass, but that's changing. And so they're starting to think about their next career or even an early retirement because the business can be so lucrative. And so we don't have enough bodies fundamentally. We don't have enough minds and hearts to keep this industry growing and thriving in the direction we need it to. We can't afford for these folks to leave. So we have to start talking differently about what that alignment can look like and how to support them as they achieve that.
Man, that was a good rant. There's a lot in there. And the industry is so, when I say industry, I mean, it's a humongous series of silos, as you know. You know, you have the carrier side, you got the agent and broker side, you have big regional players, you have wholesalers, MGAs. There, it's sort of tribal when people say, oh, this is a relationship business. You know, I didn't mean to get into it, but I'm glad I did because it's a relationship business. And they always talk about that. They don't talk about how much fun underwriting is. They don't talk about what it's like to, like you said, with you know, picking up the phone, everybody's mad at me. The price has tripled, you know, for the contractors that I'm insuring and so forth. But I fundamentally, I don't know. So you have that feeling that you're exactly right with how work has evolved now, where people aren't, it's more challenging to build a strong culture. And I think for the insurance industry needs a complete rebrand of its employer brand, if you will, a total reboot of what the industry is like. But it has a lot of underlying work to do too, which is getting to your last point about not having enough bodies and minds and hearts to keep the industry going, because we have to create a different kind of workplace, whether it's hybrid, remote, or in person, or all of the above. I think it's, I mean, that is a, well, how do you do it? How do you make it so that people are energized by the thought of going to work and working in this quote relationship business?
Yeah, I think there's a million answers to that question. And of course, context matters. But I think I'll start sort of at the negative and talk about my experience. I've spent time on the underwriting side, on the carrier side, and then the agency side as well. And one of the things that I've observed is there's a certain level of complacency that we accept as an industry. I remember this back from my underwriting days. There were, and this is still true today, often you'd have a disconnected underwriter paired up with an agency, and the agency would complain. And so they would move that underwriter to a different agency. And then when that agency complained, they would move that underwriter to another team. And then they would maybe move that underwriter to a different department, because that underwriter just wasn't the right fit for that role. And that complacency with, if I ignore it, it will go away. Or if I don't know what to do, I'll do nothing and maybe the problem will solve itself. That's where I challenge leadership to be brave and be bold and make the moves that are necessary to make sure that that culture is held sacred, because it really does start from the top. And on the agency side, I see this right now in, we're tolerating a lot of, I use the word bullying, but bullying from our clients. And producers with big books of business have a lot of power right now. And so we're doing a lot of things to accommodate these large books of business, but to the detriment of the culture within our organizations. And right now, when people are looking for new opportunities, whether they are actively looking or they are being approached by a recruiter or a third party, culture's at the top. That's the thing that they will leave if it's broken. And that's the thing they are looking for if they're considering making a move. What do we not teach leaders in the insurance industry? How to build strong culture. We take our best salespeople and we make them sales managers. They're miserable. They're not producing. They're not equipped to lead. They're not wired to lead. They're wired to get deals done. And now we've put them in charge of leading a team of people. It's a terrible misalignment of goals and skill sets. Same thing on the underwriting side. We've taken, I'm stereotyping here, but maybe someone who's quite analytical, of course, has some people skills because you need to be a good negotiator and relationship builder as an underwriter. We move them into a people leadership role and they panic because their sweet spot is heads down doing a coverage analysis or digging into policy forms. And there's nothing wrong with that. But this whole idea, we need to hire for skills and less about, oh, you were an underwriter, now you can be an underwriter again. The best move I made in my career, and I had no idea I was doing it at the time, was to move from the carrier side to the agency side, because it gave me a perspective that few people have in our industry. And I was a darn good producer because I already understood the insurance product. That was my underwriting background. I had a great technical edge on any of my competitors because I already knew insurance. And so I think it's a challenge to leadership to know what your strengths are and be brave and be vulnerable and humble enough to say, there are things I don't know. If you've been working for the same company for 35 years, you've only ever seen your company from the inside. And you know a lot about that company, but there's a lot you don't know about what's working really well in other organizations. And so there is a bit of, you know, we need certain characteristics and qualities in leadership, but right now, that vulnerability, that authenticity, that transparency, to me, those are the things that are going to create next level leaders as we think about the future, particularly as we think about the generation coming into the business who is demanding those things of the leaders that they work for. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to hide in your corner office with your reports and your spreadsheets. That's not acceptable. to the generation that's coming in. There's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. I'm really struck with culture is a thing that has been relegated historically to the HR department, you know, hanging up signs in the lunchroom or whatever.
Yep.
And brand was relegated to marketing, the marketing department, when in fact, it's all the same thing, the internal brand, the culture, as well as the external brand, what the customer and business partner sees. And the best organizations have, they've written down, there's some things that, you know, you've heard of, you've seen mission, vision, et cetera, but core values to me, I just, in recent years, especially recent years, have just risen up to be like the most important thing that anybody in the C-suite should lead and make sure that they're enthusiastically braced around the organization. And I think you're spot on. The building culture by core values that are authentic to the organization. And I mean, you could have core values that are things that are very obvious things like, you know, challenge the status quo, where people can raise their hand in a meeting and challenge workflow that's been around forever that doesn't work anymore, you know, and not get fired for it. In the old days, you did get fired when you challenged the status quo. But having those five or seven statements that resonate with your people is really key. And I like I said before, if we're not going to do this as an industry, individual organizations, people are going to leave, to your point, and not enough people will be attracted to the industry. And man, what you said about getting stale, I can't tell you how important it is for insurance carrier people, anybody who's in that larger organization, to get out there, pay for customer experience research and business partner experience research, but go out and talk to agents, talk to people on the front lines, because everything gets filtered by middle management if you don't do that. And there's nothing more powerful if you're in one of these board meetings. You mentioned board member bullying people. Mm-hmm. I've seen it so many times, Meg. Yep. And when you say, you know, last week I was talking to John Smith at Smith Insurance, and he said this, this, and this about the company and our policies or whatever workflows. Everybody starts paying attention. There's something about that. Now, why is that? Why does there have to be such a disconnected, you know, understanding there? Why is everything filtered? Why doesn't the C-suite really know what people, policyholders and agents are thinking and saying? Why not? Why not find out the truth? Because it's going to come around eventually anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of ways to go about capturing that feedback, but you have to want it. And then once you have it, you have to be willing and interested in doing something about it. And I think that's the other piece of this, is that we're not talking about changing the color, and I don't want to simplify, but the header on your marketing piece. We're not talking about that. We're talking about really listening to people and meeting them where they are, about the things that are causing them specific and immediate pain, and then being willing to take that on and actually affect change. And the only place that that can happen is within the top levels of leadership. And there is a disconnect. I love, love, love when I see leadership out in the field. I know that it's safe in the corner office and there's a lot of responsibility, and I don't mean to diminish that, but it is not just a goodwill gesture to pull up the chair and sit with an insurance agent in their office, if you can find them. These days, that's a whole struggle, but they will show up if you're a top leader of an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
But to roll up your sleeves and really listen with curiosity and an open mind goes a long way in terms of, you know, this market's going to turn again. And I think that's the really curious thing that we seem to forget, is how cyclical our business is. And while there is a hesitation to speak because we don't want to say the wrong thing, or we don't have the right answer or the right information, so we say nothing, the pendulum will swing again and the door will open again, and carriers are going to want to write new business again, and they're going to be willing to compete for it. You would think we would learn our lesson, but we don't. We have a lot of evidence over time. And what we have now that we maybe didn't have the last time the market was in this condition is all sorts of tools that we didn't have available to us then. The ways that we communicate, the ways that we can access people, the things that we can talk about, the way that we can really distill down these messages to make them personal and meaningful and local is really helpful. And our agents right now are really craving that. They want to know, we cannot be talking about surplus shortages and inflation and a lot of these sort of jargony terms if you're an agent talking to a policyholder. Nuclear verdicts are another one. If a decision has been handed down in California and you're a policyholder in Georgia, give me a reason that affects me here in Georgia. And of course, it affects the company. It affects the overall financial performance. It affects the industry. But the more that we can personalize these messages, and the only people that are going to be able to give you that information are the agents themselves. We have to listen to them, and we have to make sure that we keep those lines of communication open and be willing to get it wrong, be willing to stub our toes, even though we are legally bound. Of course, I'm not ignoring the law here, but admit what we don't know and do a little bit of the help me help you energy. And it's amazing how I think we're closer to that proverbial middle than we think we are right now. But a lot of what I'm seeing right now are just some fractured relationships because honest, difficult conversations are not being had. And that's a really hard place to recover from.
Yeah, I think as long as you want to consult in this way, Meg, I think you'll always have work because the insurance industry is largely run by transactional thinkers and leaders, people who are managing by objectives, managing by numbers, performance evaluations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all about them. And it's a very difficult business to get. You got to get it right. You can go out of business really quick if you're not pricing the product right. So there's that piece of it. But what we need more, I think, is transformational leadership that embraces change. And like you said, good listeners, right? Some of more of the softer, good communicators, they're the softer skills. You cannot teach soft skills to people. You know, that's why smart agents will hire like a really good server in a restaurant, right? And teach them insurance. I think the soft skills is where that underwriter you mentioned earlier that they kept moving around. That's somebody with bad soft skills, maybe not good people skills, which you need in this business, right? So I think that's a challenge. Where do you find those transformational leaders? How do we cultivate and grow them and not just promote somebody who's in charge of personal lines or in charge of underwriting or actuary or legal or go on? Just because they're there, they rise to a position of power, but they're not that kind of leader. That it may be a little crass, but I'm sorry. I feel like we just need some fresh blood.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you know, for so long we've rewarded longevity. Stick around, get level promotion number one, number two, number three, and now you're a VP or an AVP and then an SVP, and now you're in that proverbial corner office. Sit, you know, play the game, if you will. And I'm playing my own game over here. I don't know where this is going. This is not the business I'll retire from when the time comes. There's all sorts of things that I've yet to even daydream about that I'm assuming will come my way based on how the first several chapters of my career have gone. I think we need to embrace, you know, a great insurance technician doesn't necessarily make a great insurance leader. However, you have to have an understanding and appreciation for the quirkiness of this business. And I still see a lot of that. So how do I say this neutrally? It's the way we've always done it is the way we'll continue to do it. Mm-hmm. And so we're promoting our friends. We're holding space, you know, at the table for the person who we like or who we favor, but who maybe isn't the best person for the role. Or when we think about culture, affecting culture, there are so many talented individuals who are sitting in underwriting desks right now. There are so many smart, scrappy insurance agents that would make fantastic underwriting leaders right now. There is no path for those transitions. There is no path. I created it because my phone rang and I was frustrated enough on that day that I decided to take the call and it made sense. And so all of a sudden I went from being a carrier rep to being an insurance agent. I never saw it coming. It was not part of any sort of my plan. As I mentioned, it ended up to be one of the most formative experiences and the best experiences. But let's think differently about people in claims versus underwriting or loss control versus sales. There's so many combinable and cross-saleable skills that we have in this industry. But like you said, we tend to silo. We tend to put butts in seats, if you will. And as long as you're happy, we're going to leave you there. And I think there's a lot of people that would welcome a challenge. They continue to serve the industry. They continue to be here and be present, but learn new skills. And then we get to see really what they're made of. We get to see them flex different muscles and grow and strengthen different muscles than maybe they've been able to do at an underwriting desk. I was a headquarters underwriter for a long time and did fine. I really started to thrive in the field because I got to be It was just a different energy for me. I loved it. But had I not had that opportunity, I never would have been able to express that part of myself, which never would have introduced me to the agency that ended up hiring me to become a producer for them. And so I think it's a two-way conversation. It's not solely on the company to see the potential in the individual, right? The individual needs to self-advocate to make sure that they're letting their career aspirations be known to leadership and that they're raising their hand when opportunities come and that they're being a bit of the squeaky wheel, because for so long, no news is good news in our business. And we tend to fight the fire that's burning the hottest. And if you seem like you're fine, then you're probably fine. And so we do need to remember that this is a two-way street. But I get excited when I think about people being willing to take a chance on themselves, lean into that curiosity with an unknown outcome. And I say that because at times when I have done that, there was a lot of fear, there was a lot of anxiety, there was a lot of apprehension, but 100% of the time, what came on the other side was better than anything I could have imagined. And that's why I get excited about it, is I see people playing small. And I want them to feel supported as they think about what else might be possible for them, because guess what? It only helps the industry at the end of the day. And that's, to bring it back around, talent crisis, bad impressions out there in the general job market, generations not necessarily jumping in for a career in insurance, all of that is true right now. And so having people that find that alignment, who are continuing to be challenged to the extent that they want to be challenged, everybody wins in that case.
Yeah, that's really well said. I've taken a chance on yourself, and there's a term I've heard called intrapreneur, like making changes. So you don't have to necessarily leave and go out on your own, although going on your own is also can be exciting, energizing, draining, all those things. But, you know, one thing, and before we wrap up, that there's a clear distinction in my mind between working for the man, you know, the corporate environment, the traditional man, that's what we call it, that goes back a ways. Again, I'm dating myself.
Sentiment.
Working for the man, you know, where there is very little downside risk, unless you're a complete D-level player and you steal or whatever, there's really little downside risk, but there's a tremendous upside risk if you don't self-advocate, as you said, if you don't get promoted, because you're just going to get your whatever the board said is an acceptable salary change. You know, how many times can you get promoted? I feel like it's suffocating, because I've been on both sides of all of this. The alternative, when you're on your own or you start something, there's really no upside risk at all. You know, you work hard and you might see a different return than working hard for the man. The downside is there, but if you have confidence in yourself, and some of this, I think, Meg, you know, talking to professionals like yourself can build a certain level of confidence too, to take that step. But having confidence in yourself, working hard, and also, I tell you, when you do something for yourself like that, it can be a game changer for your personal life and other interests that you have as well. And you may find that you're taking a page out of what younger people already know, which is, I don't know if I want 9 to 5. I want lots of different, quote, jobs. Maybe one of my jobs is not paying at all. It's working for a charity locally or something. It's changing. I really feel, to end on a positive note from my perspective anyway, is I feel like there's a lot of good hope out there for the industry, because it's not like we're selling something like ice to an Eskimo or something. This is an important products. It's gotten a little upside down, you know, over the years with the everything getting lawyered up. I get it, but it's good. It's a good thing that people are insured. It allows them to live. It allows a business to thrive. You know, it allows people to go out and build something new. But I think the rules of engagement, as you've outlined in this podcast, I think need to evolve. And I'm hoping that the younger generations will do it. I really do. And I'm excited also. We haven't even talked about diversity. I can't wait to see how a more diverse employer brand will sell to and help people who are more diverse, because that's where the population's going. Mm.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I'm optimistic. I'm pessimistic at the same time, right? I'm practical. I live, you know, two feet grounded in reality. I do think that the relationship that we have with work is very much a relationship. when you think about it that way. What I want to see more of is, yeah, I am a project-based consultant. I plug into an organization to fill a specific need, and then I move on. There's no reason that we can't do that as an underwriter or a claims adjuster or a loss control rep. I would love to see lots and lots of those traditional 9-to-5 corporate employees flip the script, become an independent contractor, start pitching your services. What you get in return is the freedom and flexibility that I never had in the corporate world. I had that to some degree. I made my own schedule, but at the end of the day, I was always accountable to someone else. And I didn't realize that that for me was what was missing. You can still be of service to the industry. You can still be a career professional underwriter or insurance agent. You're allowed to rewrite the rules of the game. And I think that's where the creativity in this generation is going to push that, because I remember early in my career, I needed, and probably still, I worked for a public company and I had to sign I have no other professional pursuits that are competing with this job. And it was a pretty specific, things I was not able to do in order to generate more income for myself because there would be a conflict there. And this generation coming up isn't having it. They're not signing the non-competes that we signed 30 years ago. They're not willing to be beholden to one organization for the next 40 years. And so kicking and screaming, it's coming. And I like to think, because I have the credentials, the pedigree, if you will, having been in the industry for as long as I have and accomplished and achieved what I have and the work that I've done, to be able to say some of the outrageous, outlandish things I say these days, that it means something. Because in a sense, I'm living proof, right? I'm doing it. I came from a different place and I'm not 25, but I don't think this is a case where we're going to find a bunch of people that are going to fall in line and comply. I think we're the ones who are going to have to be okay with the discomfort and start to be the problem solvers and the solution finders, because I don't know that we're going to have much of a choice at the end of the day. So fascinating stuff.
Sure is. Well, Meg, I'm sorry that we're out of time, but I so look forward to staying in touch with you and having you on again in the future recording. But I appreciate your time very much.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.